Welcome to Lost River Legends. Our motto, Ex Tenebris, is Latin for out of the shadows. We attempt to understand the complex world around us and bring light to subjects hidden in darkness. We explore paranormal topics with guests from all around the world. Now welcome your Lost River Legends hosts, James and Brett. We hope you enjoy the show.
Thank you for joining us on Lost River Legends. We have a very exciting show. We're joined today by Matt from Matt Squatch Presents. He has a very successful YouTube channel that is growing rapidly. He's also been a guest on Sasquatch Chronicles, Duke Sullivan's World Bigfoot Radio, and others. We actually go a little bit outside of the Bigfoot box and talk about Antarctica, UFOs, aliens, and other subjects of conspiracy. So hang tight. It's a lot of fun, and we're really happy to have him on. Thank you. We're here this evening with Matt from Matt Squatch Presents, and he's been gracious enough to call in via Skype and do an interview with us this evening. And I was super excited to find out that he had listened to our podcast with as few of listens as we have at this point, but we are growing. We are seeing a lot of interesting progress here. December was an epic month for us. We're pretty excited about that. And without any further ado, Matt, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on.
To make sure that we are covering the subjects that we are all interested in, which is Bigfoot. And we've done, let's see, about 8 different Bigfoot episodes, and we're taking a little bit of a pivot here. So if you're here to listen to Matt talk about Bigfoot, we're actually going to talk about something else.
Well, it's kind of funny. I think a lot of this, everything into the paranormal world and unknown discoveries, I think it all kind of goes together. And I talk about Bigfoot all day long, but I do that on a lot of podcasts and on my show, and I love it. But, you know, we're all kind of students of everything at this point. We're all kind of Renaissance men in the paranormal world. At least most of us are. So for me, sometimes it's kind of fun to talk about something a little out of my bubble, something that I could share a little bit with that I know and bounce it off other people, and we can all kind of grow. So I think it's very cool to talk about some different stuff now and then.
I agree. And I think, you know, we always kind of dip our toes into some of the different areas. I personally avoid, you know, possessions and things like that. That's just not my bag, but some people really like that. They really get into like the whole exorcism thing, and it really excites them. It's just never something that's been on my docket personally.
But I've been a guest on another show that I'm a frequent guest on. I'm pretty good friends with, and that's kind of their bread and butter is paranormal ghost stuff and possessions and monsters. And in fact, one of the shows I was on, there was a full blown demonologist. Like this guy, his name's Dave Outlandish. He's really cool. But he summons demons for people to help them with their life. Like, you want to make a deal with the devil, he's the guy to go to. So it was quite interesting because the other guys on the show were paranormal guys for ghosts. And me being a cryptid monster in the woods guy, I was kind of asking him a lot of questions like, hey, do you think Dogman's a physical manifestation? Do you think they're a real creature that's been possessed? So, I mean, it's worth looking into that stuff. But I do agree with you. That's the scariest of the scariest when you start talking about like demons and possession and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, you know, one thing that's interesting is I was just listening to an episode of Crypto PTSD, and he had Wes Germer on as a guest. And he was sharing some of Wes's unpublished stories that he wanted to get on air, but he never did. And one of those that he talked about was Dogman. And Wes's stance was, yeah, Dogman is demonic. They're right. Not physical. They're very demonic. And it's interesting because he totally went off the normal rails that Wes goes off. And it was interesting to see that.
Right. Well, I've met Wes before in person, and I was on his show, and we emailed back and forth. It's kind of like if you talk to me in person, if we had a beer and a cigar and sat on the porch around a fire, barbecued or something, I would talk to you not completely different, but a bit differently, a little more candidly about this subject. And I think that's true with a lot of researchers. And with me, I'm kind of one of those people where I try to be the same person on and off the air, and I don't try to have like a voice or a phony. But Wes has such a big audience, and there's a lot of hardcore Bigfoot people who listen to his show that don't necessarily want to hear the demonic side or something evil. So he kind of has to stay centered on the show. And I think when he gets to go on another podcast, I think it's kind of a nice chance for him to let loose or tell some of the more crazy stories that probably don't fit in with his show. So yeah, Wes is cool.
Yeah, we're big fans. Definitely our gateway to the subject, and it's one of those things that, hey, there's a new episode. And big shout out on that for an excellent, 500 plus episodes now. And episode 500 itself was a big eye opener for me personally.
Yeah, yes. Actually, I have not listened to his 500th episode yet. I've caught up. I got to like 499, and then with the holidays and everything, I'll probably get to it tomorrow at the gym, or at least start it. But and with my own content and everything else, I'm always so far behind on his show and on Duke's show. Like I feel bad. Like, people I really respect, like pretty much like mentors in his business, and I don't, And then with the family and everything else, I'm over there watching a YouTube video. My wife's just giving me a look, like, "What are you doing?" kind of a thing. So it's hard because some of these shows are hours long, and it's really hard to keep up with them sometimes.
Well, and it comes down to being, a producer and a consumer. You've kind of got to split your time.
Exactly.
Manage it appropriately.
Exactly.
We wanted to talk this evening. I know we're kind of belaboring it a little bit, but we want to talk tonight about Antarctica. Now, my first kind of exposure to Antarctica outside of, grade school and high school, just having it be this icy mass, down on the South Pole.
With penguins.
Don't forget the March of the Penguins, and Morgan Freeman. But no, honestly, there was I think in 2002, 2003-ish, there was a Nexus magazine article, and it outlined the Operation High Jump and Admiral Byrd, and talked about New Schwaben Land. And then it got into this aspect of it that was talking about how they had a Superman down there that they had encountered that had torn a couple guys apart. And when they encountered it, it actually looked like a Sasquatch or like a snow beast or something. And that was my first exposure to there might be something going on down in Antarctica that we don't know about. And
right.
This would be an awesome movie script, by the way.
Right. Well, I've often joked that Sasquatch or Bigfoot, some variation of it has been seen on every continent except Antarctica. And then I always make the joke, there's probably one down there clubbing penguins. It makes sense. They're virtually seen everywhere else. They're seen on islands. They're seen in Britain. They're seen in very remote areas. They're seen next to cities. And you have this huge unexplored landmass. And we already know from the Himalayas and from Canada and northern parts of Russia and Europe that variations of a large hominid that we know as Bigfoot would probably be able to survive on Antarctica too, as long as it was able to find food and, a cave during the real cold months, Just like anywhere else, it would probably be able to survive just fine.
Well, that's one of the things is it's kind of warming up down there from what I understand. Dr. Sala, who has a pretty good body of work that he's presented, and also a book about Antarctica and some of the hidden secrets down there. He's talked about how there's actually active volcanoes, anywhere from 90 to 150 active volcanoes that are heating up.
I've heard that.
So that's, you know, that could be more habitable space. It could be, you know, hey, Bigfoot's warming himself off of a geothermal vent. Who knows?
Well, to me, we always say that there are no coincidences. And one of the big things was, like, especially in the UFO world, is you look at Star Wars and Star Trek and a lot of the science fiction, and there are echoes of what people are reporting in the UFO world being released into our mainstream, you know, like 2001, A Space Odyssey, Star Wars, Death Stars, a bunch of different races, Star Trek, Federations, that there's always been this big conspiracy that they're releasing a lot of this information into Hollywood. So if we ever encounter it in real life, it seems like a second nature. And if you remember, was it 2004, the Aliens versus Predator movie? That took place in Antarctica, and it was from a geothermal volcano heated up this underground pyramid. And it was this whole, you know, the predators were this alien race that went to Antarctica and had all these pyramids, and the pyramids tied all over the world. And it was supposed to be this campy action movie, you know, Aliens versus Predator bloodbath, you know, horror movie. But you stop and think of the context of it, and you're like, well, that was rather brilliant for a horror movie, that all the pyramids are connected and they found one underground in Antarctica, and this millionaire found it hunting for oil deposits and saw it from space, and this alien species. And you're like, wow, that was pretty cutting edge for 2004. I mean, they probably wrote the script in 2002 or 2001. So you got to think that that was pretty far ahead of its time for, you know, being just a horror movie. So it's quite interesting how there's little things like that dropped into our subculture.
Yeah. And I think it's been, you know, there's some level of declassification that, you know, the CIA and the military industrial complex has been influencing the movie industry for a very long time.
Oh yeah.
And that there is kind of that whole, I don't know if you'd call it a moral obligation, but, that elites want to basically tip their hat and say, hey, we're showing you, you know, under behind the curtain kind of a thing.
Right.
For lack of a better term, you know, there's different takes on that and why they do that. But,
you know, and along with that, you have all these quote unquote, air quotes, these elitists that are traveling to Antarctica.
Right.
In these supposed secret meetings. But, you know, what's going on? And then you had Buzz Aldrin that went down there, and, you know,
before him, John Glenn,
yeah,
was spending a lot of time down there too. There was a lot of underground conspiracy type stuff going on with why John Glenn was going down there, you know, because he would be a great American public face if any truth came out, you know.
It's just it bothers me that these individuals who, if you follow their political careers, you know, a little sketchy to say the least, and here they are collecting themselves in these groups in Antarctica for some reason. What's going on? I mean, what do you think's going on?
You know, you look at all the different stuff that gets, you know, especially the UFO world. You look at this secret space program, the deep state, then you start getting into like what people refer to as the Illuminati. Then you get what people refer to as, you know, the Bilderbergs, which all these Hollywood people. And, you know, you hear about Skull and Bones, and you hear about the Freemasons, and it's kind of, you know, and it's really fascinating that it's all built on the basis of the pyramid and the eye at the top of the pyramid separate, because when you get high enough up a hierarchy, you become separate from it. And then you start hearing about all this stuff in Antarctica, all these people, then like, all the Admiral Byrd stuff, the Hollywood things. When I believe John Kerry went down there when he was Secretary of State too, you start hearing about Russian stuff. And yet, you know, there seems to be a real push on the other side in Hollywood and in media too, that the part of Antarctica is like, oh, it's just a big frozen block of ice with lots of penguins, and that's it. Move along, you know. So it's really strange. There just seems to be like a bigger picture here and how it all fits together. And guys like David Wilcock and a lot of other people have some really interesting theories that we can talk about. If those theories are 100% right, I don't know. But there's certainly, I think you could kind of listen to a lot of people and kind of draw your own conclusions. But there's definitely more than meets the eye going on down there.
Yeah, you know, and David Wilcock, as we're talking about him for a second, you know, and Masonic rites and whatnot, we all think of the 33rd degree Mason as kind of the highest level. But David says, no, that's there's actually additional levels above that. So,
well, that's the public ones, they'll tell you about.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. So you get all these individuals that are in, you know, maybe above 33rd degree, whatever, and they're all kind of meet the cut, and they all get to go down there and see whatever's down there.
Yeah, well, like I was saying, I think Bilderbergs, the World Trade Organization, all these different corporations, something like 80% of the top 200 corporations, the board members are all boards on each other's companies, so they're all intertwined and in bed with each other. And then you start looking at like all the big, like Harvard and Yale and the American institutions and European institutions, and everybody's got, you know, like the Saudis and the Bush family and all the ties to America. And then you start piecing together the wars and you're like, okay, this is painting a really big picture that everybody's really in cahoots here. And there's a few very powerful people and families that are kind of pulling all these strings. So
when it gets into, you know, I'm willing to accept or to consider a lot of different points of view. Again, dipping my toe into different directions, but this there's history there now. So I kind of glossed over that there at the beginning, but for those of you that aren't familiar, there was at the end of the World War II, or actually earlier on, the Germans were deeply interested in New Schwabenland or Antarctica. They actually named it New Schwabenland because they wanted it to be a new motherland for them, a place of escape, a place of refuge.
Now, they could bail out to.
Yeah, a place that they could take their U-boats to and evacuate to. So there's quite a bit of validity to that, in that there was an entire military operation called Operation High Jump involving Admiral Byrd, who was a polar explorer at the North Pole. And he also was kind of charged with bringing a big fleet of Navy vessels and aircraft down there to the South Pole and to basically route out and find where the enemy was. And there were different experiences that evolved from that, including, you know, basically UFOs shooting down some of their planes.
Right. And, they also got intercepted by planes that had swastikas on them, although they weren't any aircraft that they knew. There was all sorts of really strange reports from Admiral Byrd's officially and unofficially from his expedition. And this wasn't a scientific. I mean, he came down there with like a whole fleet and planes and warships. And I mean, he came down ready for a battle. So he was definitely tipped off about something. And it's a little off subject, but kind of on subject at the same time. While we're sitting here talking about this, I remember vaguely it had to have been 2006 or 2007 on Coast to Coast AM. There was a pilot who was flying research vessels down there, and he got lost over Antarctica. And this was before all this Antarctica stuff came out. I mean, we're talking 2005, 2006, like what we were saying earlier. And he reported that he got lost, went through a bank of clouds, and ended up flying over patches of green with like mastodons roaming around and warm spots and stuff like that. And then he, you know, kept flying. His instruments were all funny. And eventually he went through another fog bank and he was back out over the ice, you know. And this was 2005, 2006. So back then it was kind of just like a tongue-in-cheek story. But I'm sure if you look, there's probably lots of stories of very similar things going on down there.
Well, and the fact that the airspace over both poles is restricted and heavily policed and a huge military presence there. It's no wonder that no one can get access to that space.
Right. And there's all this stuff, theories about when they set off thermal charges or they do blasting or do different things that they get a big donk, they get a big hollow, that like the space under Antarctica on the solid rock is like, you know, that there's big hollow caverns and spaces under there, you know, or, you know, then you start getting into the underground base thing that's really big in the UFO world, that there's supposed to be all these interconnecting tunnels and underground caverns and societies even that live underground too. So yeah, there's all these reports of real strange stuff happening under Antarctica, under the ice, actually in the earth that's there.
And wasn't it Admiral Byrd that reported that he went inside of the earth in some kind of huge cavern and reported some beings that he saw and some different vegetation and animal life?
I do remember that. I think he said like he, one of the smaller boats like he was in went into like a giant ice cave, and it turned out to be some kind of like, I don't know what you call it, like a hangar for boats, so to speak, you know, like a enclosed like U-boat station. And then then he found all sorts of weird stuff in there, and found like signs of an ancient civilization, but he found advanced technology but looked really old, if that makes sense, you know, stuff that would be unheard of advanced to us but was, you know, like old and dusty, you know, all sorts of strange stories like that,
you know. On the subject of having it be tropical or warm, it's really interesting because there's a guy, and I can't remember his name. He used to come on the Alex Jones show, and he would talk about peak oil and things like that. But he actually wrote a book. He wrote a book about drilling oil in the Prudhoe Bay up in Alaska. And when they would drill down, they would actually find like frozen vegetation. And this vegetation didn't seem that old. They pulled up frogs that would actually, when the frogs would thaw out, they'd actually come back to life before they
and hop around.
Yeah, they actually reanimated. So I mean, that kind of lends some credence to the theory of pole shift,
right?
And well, that a rapid one at that.
Right. Well, that was the other aspect of this theory that's quite fascinating, and there's actually physical evidence for it, as opposed to just, you know, it's a pretty, you know, wild ass guess mostly, is that Antarctica used to be Atlantis, or the fabled city of Atlantis, and then the poles shift really rapidly, and naturally when you go to one end of the earth or the other, it gets really cold. And some of the stuff that was really fascinating is that they found apparently mammoths or mastodons, the big snow elephants. But I guess when the Russians found these guys, they were so flash frozen that they were able to like take 10,000 year old mammoth and actually eat it. You know, they're able to like thaw it out and grill it, and it tasted fresh. I mean, leave it to the Russians to eat, you know, 10,000 year old mammoth meat, or however old it is. The science behind it though is, I know a little bit about this stuff because I've done some engineering and thermal background and stuff, is if you think of even a small mammoth, we'll call it 5,000 pounds, 2.5 tons, and it's warm-blooded with a coat. Do you have any idea how much thermal uptake it would take, how much heat exchange it would take to freeze a mammoth solid? You know, like it would have to be like, I don't mean, yeah, it's 80 below zero and my pee froze before it hit the ground. I mean, it would have to be like absolute zero. Like it would have to be like liquid nitrogen cold to freeze a mammoth that fast, to like flash freeze it. And the same thing with frogs and a lot of other stuff. It has to be very cold, very fast in order to be preserved. So that was another one of the theories, is that at some point over Antarctica, the only thing that would be that cold, there are no earthly temperatures that would get cold enough to freeze a mammoth that fast, is that it would have to be open space, like the cold vacuum of space, like a part of the earth the sun isn't shining on, but the atmosphere is gone from that part of the earth. And that was another one of the theories, is that while the poles were shifting and the earth was moving and the earth was shifting and changing the way it sat and revolved around the universe, that there was some kind of tear in our atmosphere. And it came on so fast that it was able to completely freeze out this whole civilization. And then I guess that goes in with the whole flood myth too, that the flood of Noah, and virtually every religion has some kind of a flood myth. And there's physical evidence of it, of many thousands of years ago of there being some kind of a great flood. So that kind of fits in with this time frame. So it all kind of, like we were saying, it all kind of fits together a little too conveniently almost, you know, like you couldn't make this stuff up. There's something to it.
You know, and another point that's interesting is we see the anomaly of the Aurora Borealis up north specifically, but there's been some NASA images that have been released, and namely one of them that I saw the other day, I just looked it up, was Neptune, and there's several other planets out there that they all display, I shouldn't say all, but several of the planets that they've captured these images on have displayed similar Aurora Borealis in their poles. And I think that's interesting. There's someone that I heard that was saying there's some kind of energy, some kind of waveform, whatever creates those that anomaly, it comes right out of the poles themselves,
right,
assuming that there's some kind of hollow or empty space there for that to travel through.
Right. Well, it's the conventional theory of having a liquid metal core, you know, we're talking how many hundreds of miles across liquid metal spinning in the core of our Earth is molten hot. This is creating some kind of a magnetic field. And then in the upper atmosphere where the Aurora Borealis is moving, you know, this magnetic field is moving these particles around and making it display light. You know, I think that's how it worked, but yeah, I've never heard of it in the South Pole though. So that's kind of fascinating. I mean, is there? I mean, do you guys know? Is there Aurora Borealis in the South Pole?
I believe so, but it goes by a different name. It's like Aurora Australis or something. It's a it's a different ending name, but it's still an aurora.
Well, this also kind of gets into, you know, all the fascinating stuff with Antarctica about there being a secret base, and it was a the Germans went down there and, you know, well before the war, but made contact with an alien species that had been there underground for a long time. I've also heard reports of, this is where I've heard conflicting. I heard that the Germans went down and made contact with an alien civilization, but I've also heard that the Germans went down and all the aliens were dead, and they basically came across this technology. Like it was just sitting there, like a big empty town, essentially. What are your guys' thoughts? Do you think they found all this old stuff that, you know, is really advanced, or do you think they actually met UFOs down there? Or
I think that there's a UFO aspect, and it could tie in with. I think that they had their own developments in UFO technology. There's a whole Vril vein of things, and then there's a whole engineering vein of things that they took for energetics. I think they developed their own, but I right also think that there quite possibly could be an ancient interstellar object down there that that's either still serves as a spacecraft, or, you know, we've heard from the David Wilcock camp and the Corey Good camp that there's actually a large mothership down there that basically different smaller size UFOs can nest into, kind of like on a conveyor belt, and that could account for some of the UFO sightings that have been historic.
Right. Well, I think for a lot of people, when you broach the subject of what's going on with Antarctica, I think if you leave the UFO alien aspect out of it and just say it was Atlantis, and Atlantis, for whatever reason, alien or not, was a super advanced civilization that got swallowed up in the water and we never found where it was. Then you could just say that, you know, hey, whatever the Germans found down there was a very ancient but advanced, even more advanced than we have today, technology, or technology that maybe we don't even know. And the Germans being pretty much, if there was some advanced technology, I think you'd want to send the Germans anyway, because they're the best engineers in the world, really. So it'd be kind of ironic that if the Germans were the ones that found it, because they're so good at the engineering and the technical aspect of it. But yeah, then when you start, you know, saying that, hey, maybe there's a alien mothership down there that's like an alien aircraft carrier where other smaller ships are coming on and off of there. And, you know, and there's also supposed rumors that in the Vatican Library, that they have, you know, in the deep dark troves from the burning of the Alexandria library, that they transferred these records to the Vatican, and that there's stuff in the Vatican record that, that talks about like Atlantis, and that talks about UFOs, and talks about a lot of this technology. So there's a lot of different conspiracies going, a lot of different cultures that are involved.
You know, and I think those are some awesome points. And I think those align with exactly what James and I have been talking about is, you know, just on our own. But one of the things that James brought up was the Vril aspect of the Germans and the Nazis. And, you know, the early developments of the UFOs that we see as, you know, disc-shaped aerial objects. You know, and I have to say, when I say UFO, I don't mean alien necessarily.
It means unidentified flying object.
It does, you know? And I think there's, you know, that moniker everyone thinks, oh, it's alien. And when I say it, right. It doesn't mean alien necessarily. So, but you know, there's a lot of those early, you know, and there's pictures and video that have been captured of these Nazi aircraft that resemble UFOs. With the typical bell, the central bell housing, and then you got the disc around it. Those are the same things that we're seeing in Antarctica, from what I understand.
Right. Well, and you got to remember, the Germans were the first ones to do like a flying wing, you know, like the B-2 bomber and wedge shaped and all these different, and, you know, rocket technology. The Germans were really far ahead of their time, you know. And if it wasn't for Hitler going basically nuts the last few years of the war, they could have put up a lot longer, a lot harder fight if they actually, you know, fought their military well and didn't invade Russia and developed some of this technology. I mean, the world could look very different today.
Yeah, we'd be speaking German or be lampshades, right?
Right.
I've heard that said before.
Yes. The other thing that's really kind of interesting when you talk about Germany going down there is all the German mysticism, like, you know, the Thule Society or Thule, however you pronounce it, and then all their, you know, basically like Satan worshiping. And then you look at like their super soldier programs and the stuff that Dr. Mengele did with all the prisoners. And it all kind of like, you know, as opposed to just, you know, the horrible, horrible things that happened with, you know, the conventional war and the Jews and the battle for power, you start looking, like I said, at, you know, the German mysticism, the whole rise of a Third Reich that would last 1,000 years, and all this really bizarre stuff that they were into and human experimentations, and they were trying to make hybrids between apes and humans and stuff. And then you put that into the interest in Antarctica, and it's like there's too much weird stuff to ignore with the whole Nazi Germany thing, you know? Like, besides all the conventional warfare and the horrible atrocities that they did for political reasons, or for they did it out of hate, obviously, all the terrible things they did for the Jew. But you put all that aside and you just look at, you know, the mysticism. You know, I mean, the SS had a little skull on their outfit. You know, I mean, there's some weird stuff going on with these guys, even, you know, back in the 40s. So it makes it seem like they're in connection with something else that we don't know or we can't explain, you know, whether it's something demonic or something out of this world or some kind of a ancient knowledge that even today we don't know. There was really something else going on with those Nazis.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, not to downplay any of the atrocities that they committed and things that they did to really make a huge dent on the world population and the formation of different countries and things like that. I mean, it really shaped
our world,
our whole world and things as we know it. But we also have this aspect of, it's called Paperclip.
Yes.
And so Paperclip, we have over 10,000 high level engineers, scientists, basically given a free pass to come into our country to develop advanced weaponry, rocketry, and who knows, you know, what all was rolled into that as far as technologies and knowledge goes.
Right. Well, you got to remember with Operation Paperclip, taking place in the mid 40s, 1945, 46, 47. And then shortly thereafter, you have Roswell and the whole 50s UFO craze. And then you got to remember, we think of the 1960s and the 1940s. Really, think of 1945 to the early 60s, and that's 15, 16, 17 years. All these scientists are still alive. So, and then you look at the development of nuclear arms. You look at the whole Cold War, and, you know, we just made bigger and better bombs. We went from conventional bombs to thermal nuclear bombs, multi-stage weapons, you know, stuff that used to take out a small town could now take out, you know, like half the state of California if it wanted to, you know, power that mankind shouldn't have. And then you look at, you know, a lot of these guys, a lot of these Germans from Operation Paperclip, some of them were younger too. And if you had a grandfather that fought in World War II like I did, like my grandfather made it to 2001, so, and there's some of them that are still alive, you got to think some of these guys from Operation Paperclip survived well into the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. So you think about stealth technology, you know, all these billion-dollar aircraft and these intercontinental ballistic missiles, the space race, space telescopes, the Star Wars stuff, all the, you know, nuclear developments, nuclear submarines. You got to all think that's probably all coming from those guys. It's all coming from the military-industrial complex, you know, because when we went into World War II, it was, you know, diesel-powered tanks and 15-horsepower jeeps and rifles and steel helmets. I mean, we came out of it with the nuclear bomb. So you got to think from 1940 to like 1955, we are a very, very different country. You know, the jet age had entered, television, radios, the first computers. I mean, it all happened so fast, and it all happened after the end of World War II with all these Germans coming over and a lot of them escaping to South America as well. You know, it just seems like it's just too big a coincidence. And these guys really helped America, you know. Plus, if I'm correct, I think the Russians had their version of Operation Paperclip too. They took a bunch of engineers and a bunch of people for their space race and their programs.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me to the question is, you know, was the Cold War, was it a front to advance these different technologies? You know, was it an excuse to funnel, you know, black project funds into various things? I think there was an interview that Richard Serrett had on his program where they were talking about the black budget being way, way, way more because there's this vast, vast amount of gold that was actually kept, you know, it's kept off the books. It was from the rape of Nanking and how there's just troves of treasure that kind of gets used and thrown towards these different projects.
Well, you know, that makes sense. If you're the U.S. government under a black budget or whatever, and your military unit or your CIA unit uncovers, you know, pick a number, $10 trillion in gold, you're not going to tell anybody. You're going to take that and spend it and keep it and do whatever you want to do with it, and then it'll be like it never existed. And it's also, war is such a great, you know, because you look at the Cold War, you know, all this, you know, making tens of thousands of nuclear bombs. We had B-52s flying, you know, hundreds of them in the air, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You had, you know, East and West Germany. You had all these submarines going out there. We were literally spending millions and millions and millions of dollars a second for, like, the Cold War, just to keep planes in the air, to keep guys with food in their stomach, to keep these tanks rolling, to keep the bombs being developed. You know, just to think that there's hundreds of B-2 bombers in the 60s and 70s and in the 50s, just constantly in the air, 24. As soon as one's land, another one's taking off, you know, ready to strike. And the Russians are doing the same thing to us. It seems like such a convenient way to get rid of a crap load of money, you know. Kind of like when you look at the Iraq wars and everything else, it's like, this is just such a convenient way to spend trillions and trillions of dollars. Oh, well, we're at war. That's why we're spending all this money. And the public and Congress and the conventional government would just be like, okay, that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's that kind of leads to the next thing about, you know, Donald Rumsfeld on 9/10 saying,
I was just going to mention there's
2.7 trillion with a T dollars of unaccounted for funds that we cannot trace. The Pentagon cannot, Department of Defense and Pentagon cannot find.
And if you look at his face when he says that, I mean, I can't say that just in my basement as we record this. I can't say that with a straight face. And he said it just like, eh, whatever. $2.7 trillion, whatever, it's gone.
Well, you know, and it's like $2.7 trillion. It's like, look, I go to the drive-thru, pay with a 20, and get $9 back, and the change falls between the seats, you know? Or I lose a dollar in a pair of jeans, and I find it when I wash it. That's losing money, you know? And the whole government, you know, oh, they paid, you know, $200 for a hammer or $1,500 for a toilet seat, you know? Yeah, yeah. You know, the whole famous stuff. Even that doesn't add up how much money they were missing. I don't think people realize, you know, like how much $1 trillion is. And like David Wilcock and the other guys were mentioning, like $1 trillion doesn't build you a city. That builds you a country. Like you could literally build like a medium-sized country. You could build like a Germany or a Switzerland. I guess Switzerland's pretty small. Or like a France or like, you know, like a Belize. You could build, or a Mexico. You could build a fairly large country with infrastructure, homes, everything for $1 trillion. It is just so much money. And you got to remember, that's in 2001 money. That was probably going back from the 90s and the 80s. You know, with inflation, that number is probably $5 trillion now. So,
you know, as we're on the topic of military-industrial complex, government conspiracies, and all this money, James and I, after we started this podcast, we come across a channel on Instagram that we follow. It's called Creepy Green Texts, and this channel, they basically curate a bunch of different stories from 4chan, which is kind of like, you know, the garbage pit of the internet. It's really,
I know what it is.
Yeah. Pretty dirty thing. So, but he goes in there, he finds these cool stories, that people submitted, you know, anonymously. But one of the ones that we saw, it's probably been a couple months ago. It's a supposed former military guy, that worked on a military base installation in Antarctica. And he details some of the things that he's worked on, the pyramids. You know, we know that there's a pyramid up there. I mean, it's on Google Earth. You know, we don't have all of it. It might just be a mountain, who knows. But as far as we understand, it's a pyramid. Anyway, this guy's story is quite lengthy, but he talks in some incredible detail. We'll have to get this story to you. But he talks about...
I did start following those guys on Instagram, by the way.
And yeah.
So some of the stuff he posts is kind of, whatever, to be quite honest.
It is.
But some of the... but there's been, you know, I look at them. There's been a few of them where I start reading them, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then I get hooked and end up reading the whole thing.
Exactly. A lot of them, it's just kind of like, that's a kind of a fun little story, whatever. And then next. But the one that he has on this one on Antarctica is pretty interesting. Because it details, you know, we kind of want to do a special on this one if we can, maybe down the road. But he talks at length about they're sending these drones into this pyramid. You know, this military base is X amount of miles away from this pyramid. They send these drones into the pyramid, and there's hieroglyphics. There's murals on the wall. There's statues. There's different things. And it's pretty mind-bending, you know. It's pretty out there, very X-Files-ish.
That's funny. It actually does sound a lot like Aliens versus Predator, where the research ship went down there and went, "Wow, look at all these statues and hieroglyphs."
Okay. maybe there's a play off that, but you know, it reminds me of the X-Files movie itself.
Well, yeah.
There's a lot of tie in there as well.
It's how you put it into our culture. Like if it's almost a protection type thing, where if you ever did get abducted by an alien, or you were in some area you shouldn't be, or you ever had a close encounter, you would expect to see the little grays. You might expect to see tall grays. You might expect to see, some kind of a lizard man thing, or, you know, they come in peace, almost as kind of like, you know, like there are bears in the woods, kind of like as a way to prepare you. And I always kind of wonder this, kind of going back to the Bigfoot thing, because with me, it's always going to come back to Bigfoot. You just have to realize that when you're dealing with me, is that when there's a whole sect in the Bigfoot world. There's a whole offshoot, as you guys know, of the, you know, like Wes calls them the flute players, you know. And I've talked to these people where there are forest brothers. They would never hurt us. They're a peaceful species. They're an advanced species. They know more than us. They're peaceful. They're just here to help mankind. And they're the gentle forest giants. And I always, or like you watch Finding Bigfoot or like Matt Moneymaker or Bobo or even Cliff Brackman, who I've met and talked to a couple times. They're all very, you know, Bigfoot's peaceful. You don't have to worry about it. You know, there's more of a chance of getting eaten by a bear than a Bigfoot. And it's almost kind of like they're saying this to the mass audience, to the biggest faces, to the biggest people who have the biggest audience, that Bigfoot's safe. So if you are out hiking with your family or camping and you do see one, you probably are going to be initially scared because, one, it's not supposed to exist, but hopefully you have some semblance of, oh, there are forest brothers. We're not in real danger. This is an elusive animal. They're, you know, it almost seems like a conditioning. And it's, I don't mean in the UFO world necessarily for disclosure, but I almost kind of like, almost as like a safety precaution. Like it's definitely seems like there's a definite disinformation going on in the Sasquatch world. And you definitely see parallels with that in the UFO alien world. So I don't know what your guys' thoughts are on that.
Well, I think the hardest thing when it comes to either, but mostly on the Antarctica thing, we can't just get in our Jeep and go down the road and check it out.
Right. Well, you know, it's one thing about like an Area 51 where you go up to the fence and it says use of deadly force authorized. And you hear mysterious planes and there's guards go up there. You know they're up to something, because why the hell else would they have signs saying they're going to shoot you, you know? But you could still go there and park on the side of the road and see strange lights in the middle of the night. When something's in Antarctica, I mean, as a private person, as a private citizen, I would literally have to, like, live in my parents' basement, be basically have, like, a, you know, like, be president of a company, make millions of dollars, or at least hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, save everything I own, and then take out some giant loan just to even get a ship to take me down there. You know, as like the average person, even a well-off person, doesn't really have the resources to go down there. And you got to stop by a lot of other countries, and they're going to ask a million questions like, what are you doing? So even if I did get a boat and permission from America or the UN or whoever controls it, say, hey, Matt, what are you going down to Antarctica for? Well, I'm going to go look for the Antarctic Bigfoot and the Nazi base and all this strange stuff. You know, you think they're really going to let you go? Or they're going to let you go and you're going to fall off the boat and be an icicle and never heard from again?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just such an off-limit area. It's not like an Area 51 where you go press your face against the fence. It's just such like, you know, it could not even exist because, you know, 99.99999% of the world has never seen it.
It's a really good point, you know, and that's one of the things, and kind of go back to your initial question about, you know, all these different tiers in the Bigfoot community, UFO community. I couldn't have said it better myself. There's so many little divisions and little tiers within each of these communities. You have, you know, Bigfoot's this, and I'm going to stick to my guns and that's it. You turn around, you have another guy that says, well, Bigfoot's this. I saw one and, you know, I saw one and this one did this thing. And so I believe that they're all this way. And same thing in the UFO, alien world, just general conspiracy world. You're going to have all these different facets in these communities. And they're all going to stick to their guns. They're all going to, and it's hard because I wish more people would be more open and receptive to other things that might be out there.
Right. Well, and to me, it comes down to a common sense, kind of going back down to Bigfoot, is name one animal that's completely benevolent and loves everybody. Not dogs, not cats, not bears, not lions. I mean, you can get a mean fish, you know. everything has a personality, and there are good ones and bad ones. There are good bears, bears that run away from humans, bears that are curious around humans, and then there are man-eating bears. Same thing with lions and tigers and everything else. Okay, so if Bigfoot's an animal, how could it be any different than any other animal? There are good ones and bad ones. Then people say, well, Bigfoot's not an animal. Okay, well, let's call them human. Let's just, for the hell of it. I don't think they are, but let's just call them human. There are many bad people. In fact, I think humans are even can do worse things than animals can do to people. I mean, a bear might kill you and eat you, and then he's going to move on. You know, they're not going to torture you like humans torture people. So it's like, okay, either they're an animal or they're a human. Neither one is a good case for them being a peaceful species. And I think you could say the same thing about aliens. If you do believe, maybe you don't believe David Wilcock, maybe you don't believe the whole extraterrestrial stuff and Bob Lazar and all the Area 51, the crash at Roswell, the Dulce underground bases, all that. Even if you don't believe that, but you're open to the idea of there being alien species, you have to at least admit there's got to be more than one kind, and some are probably nice and some probably aren't. It's just, you know, a mathematical probability that, you know, there's going to be other life out there, and some are going to be hostile and some aren't. So it's kind of that same thing with Bigfoot. To say that, you know, oh, these aliens are here to help us ascend consciousness. Well, maybe the alien that you met did. Or, you know, Bigfoot's our gentle forest brother, and he brought me an apple and said, you know, have a good life. Okay, maybe the one Bigfoot you saw said that. The one that Matt saw many years ago, I didn't see it, but the one that I had an encounter with many years ago threw a rock at my head, growled at me, and chased me out of the woods. I wouldn't call that a positive encounter. You know, but I don't think every Bigfoot would do that. So it's the same thing when, yeah, it kind of, this is kind of a bit of a rant, but it's kind of like what you're saying. Just to have your mind made up about a subject is very, you know, you're not doing yourself justice, I think.
Yeah. So. You know, it's very well said. You know, if we have, you know, if you're hiking in the forest at a popular trail, if you get attacked by a bear or a bobcat, you're going to have a bad taste in your mouth the rest of your life if you survive with those animals, right? I don't know anyone, you know, there might be a few people out there, but most people are going to be like, yeah, steer clear of those things. I hate their guts, whatever.
But it's the same thing with like a shark attack.
Exactly.
You know, surfers.
And so with a Bigfoot, if you have a crappy encounter, you know, it's hard not to cast a wide net, you know, across all of them. Because, you know, yeah, there might be some that are just like, eh, whatever, there's a human. I saw one of those a while ago, whatever. I'm bigger, stronger, faster, badder than them. If they try anything, I'll just jack them up. But whatever, that's a human. But some of them, they're like, hey, I'm pissed off because I'm seeing you. Because one of your buddies shot one of my kin, one of my kind. And I'm super pissed off when I see one of you guys. So, right, I mean, well, you have no idea what these things are thinking when you see them, but you make a great point that there's a lot of variance in that.
Right. Well, and I think less so with Bigfoot, although Bigfoot's a good analogy. When you're taking, you know, I've listened to a lot of abduction encounters for people who have encountered aliens, and the ones that are like, we bring you peace, we bring you love, we're just going to conduct this experiment on you, we need you to be calm, they can sense when you're going to do something violent. Well, of course you're going to present that. Even if you're up to some really nefarious stuff, you wanted to take over the world and you turn human beings into baby formula for your little mini aliens. You do the most horrible, torturous experiments and impregnate women with your alien corpses, whatever, or babies, whatever you're doing, that's not what you're going to tell the humans. That's not what you're going to tell people. You're going to be, hey, everything's going to be okay. We come in love. We come in peace. So even if they are up to something, they're not going to tell you what they're up to. This isn't like, you know, Mars Attacks or something like that. It's going to be a subterfuge. And I think Bigfoot probably does that to a certain extent. But I mean, more so like you have to think of aliens. You have to think of your own government and all the different levels. You know, it's all subterfuge. They're all throwing stuff out there to throw you off the scent. So if you did get abducted by an alien and they said they were your space brothers, they could be. They could also be lying to you, you know, and how would you know?
They could also have a PR team that's just trying to keep it just so.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Hi, my name's Connie. I'm with HR here. Have a free Zeta Reticuli mug and a T-shirt. And we would like you to leave a good Yelp review for Intergalactic Yelp. So,
you know, and that, I think the worst part about mankind is our ability to screw people over, right? We trick them. There's cover up. There's all these subtleties that we can pull on each other. You know, and the government, you know, we cast a wide net about the government. You know, I don't want to say that all the people in the government are the same, because they're definitely not. But the ones behind the strings, you know, the puppeteer, those right. are the people that they'll do whatever they can, say whatever they can in the best, clearest way possible, because they're past feeling, like they just don't care anymore. They can lie to your face. They can kill humans. They can do all sorts of nasty stuff. And they're just like, yeah, whatever. Right. No, well, skin off my back.
Well, if you take a look at the percentage of people who, you know, oh, have you guys ever seen the hitman for the mob, the Iceman, the Kuklinski guy, who was like a cold-blooded killer for the New York mafia? They did a bunch of prison interviews with him.
I think I've heard of this guy, yeah.
Yeah, well, he was like 1% of 1%. If it's like if 1 of 10,000 people or 1 in 100,000 people could walk into a house, put a gun up to his wife's head, his mom's head, his own kid's head, pull the trigger, and then go back to sleep like nothing ever happened. Those people do exist. And you got to think, with, 7 billion people on this earth, mathematically, there's a lot of those people, and the government will find them. And a certain number of them do end up being, you know, contract killers and, you know, no fear. And, you know, there's obviously different variations of that, you know. And those are the people that go work for the CIA as spies, where they can, you know, go sleep with a man or woman and poison people and look them right in the eye and tell them that they love you and say, I love you so much. And you're the love of my life, as they're putting cyanide in their drink, you know? So, or you look at the Mexican drug cartels and the absolute horrible things that they do to women and children and butcher people and leave them dead in the streets and blow them apart and melt them with acid. And you're like, how can a human being do this? Well, the bad to the bad, the baddest of the bad tends to rise to the top. And the longer they do it, the harder they get. And there's a push to outdo each other. So yeah, I mean, kind of going back to our same point, with aliens or Bigfoot or anything undocumented or unknown, or even things, you know, like bears, you know, you never know what's going to happen. That's why they're called wild animals. And it's the same thing with humans. Like, humans are capable of great passion and incredible feats of engineering and math and technologically, but we're also incredibly brutal. We're still apes, basically. So yeah, I mean, we have to seem so bass-ackwards to aliens that they come down. You know, like, hey, you know, they got pretty far on the economic scale, but, you know, they're basically still, you know, poop-throwing apes. So.
Yeah, there's definitely the whole gambit, you know, the whole spectrum when it comes to known human behavior. But when you couple some of that psychotic, sociopathic behavior with high technology, high access to unlimited funds...
Whatever you want.
Whatever you know. Want. And possibly off-world, you know, off-world capability.
And not to mention the media in your back pocket to bow to your every whim and all that.
Well, you have to. You have to be able to put on your face. And that's kind of, you know, at a much more surface level, you know, like him or hate him, that's the whole Donald Trump thing. Like or hate Donald Trump, there's a lot of stuff going around that is not true about him. And there's a lot of stuff he's saying that's probably not true either. But it's just to have the media so far on one end that it's almost to the point where it's like a joke. It's like, is anybody even listening to you guys anymore? You know, especially as you guys and myself included and people like Joe Rogan and the really big names, it's part of the new media. You know, podcasts, YouTubes, Instagram stories, social media. It's part of the new media. And a lot of the old media, which I think... the people who run the world control is kind of slowly dying. And I think we're kind of seeing the death rolls of that in our in our current media as well. And I think there's a lot of panic by the people who run the world, you know, that we can go to the wild west of the internet and talk about the stuff that me and you are talking about, you know? Because it's, if you look at the mainstream media, anytime they talk about aliens or Bigfoot, it's like the last 5 minutes of the news show. It's, and in other news today, a man in Island Park, Idaho says he saw Bigfoot. He said it was this tall, you know, and, or, oh, this lady says that she saw a UFO, and it's a big joke to everybody else. But I think once you get on the internet, it's so brilliant because there's no filter for that. And I think that's really scaring a lot of people who are in charge, you know, kind of the whole new media.
It is. And what you said about, you know, these people that are seeing Bigfoot, UFOs, other strange phenomenon, anomalies, whatever you want to call it. There's very much a tongue-in-cheek response, a little bit of a silly, you know,
forced. There's an eye roll.
It, yeah. Exactly. You can hear it in the voice. You can see it in the presentation of the newscast or the article. And it really puts a false light on these people. And it's too bad that it happens.
Right. Well, you know, I married into a big family. And about, I don't know, just about all of everybody, kind of including my wife, you know, my wife's very supportive of the Bigfoot paranormal cryptid thing that I'm into, but the rest of my family is just like, they all thought it was a big waste of time until recently I started making some money. Now they're kind of encouraging me a little more. But they all just think like, exactly like that. Well, if you see Bigfoot, just throw him some beef jerky. Ha, 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 ha. You know, like it's a big joke to them. And they can't even comprehend how I could make a YouTube channel and talk about this stuff and have encounters. And even from my own family, they give me, you know, different comments. And I'm just like, look, it's all fun and games until one day you're out back. And I've got people in my family that are very big outdoors that hike all the time. They backpack. They're environmentalists. So they're out into the woods for their job. And I look at them and say, look, it's all fun and games until one day you're going to see something twice your size that doesn't fit, that could tear you apart in an instant, is going to walk through your life and you cannot explain it. That is what my work is, you know? So go on blissfully unaware, dangerously unaware, in my opinion. But someday you're going to see something. You're going to find a print. A rock's going to sail through the air. You're going to see a 2-foot-wide tree turned upside down. You're going to see something that doesn't make sense. And then you can either shrug it off or you could give it some thought. And that's pretty much what I tell my family that thinks I'm crazy. And I'm like, well, there's a certain point, like everybody's crazy until you see it yourself. And that's kind of where I come in.
Everybody, that concludes part one of our interview with Matt from Matt Squatch Presents. We'll be dropping part two next week, so stay tuned for that. We encourage you to subscribe to the channel so you don't miss out on any episodes that drop in the future. And if you happen to be new to the Lost River Legends podcast, we highly encourage you to go back and listen to the previous episodes that we've dropped. If you want to support Lost River Legends in producing content, you can visit us at patreon.com/LostRiverLegends. And there you can donate any amount that you're willing to help us produce content for Lost River Legends. And lastly, if you've had an encounter with something strange, if you have a strange story to tell, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can reach us at LostRiverLegends@gmail.com. We appreciate everyone for listening, and we will catch you next week. Take care.